This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and all those of you out there on the internet. Welcome to the Senate Taxation Committee, and I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Adelstein? Senator Howey?
Here.
Senator Gerstead? Senator Maher?
Here.
Senator Merchant?
Here.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
Senator Peterson?
Here.
Senator Frisley?
Here.
Senator Hansen?
Here.
There is a quorum.
Okay, we have a quorum. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting? Moved by Senator Nelson, second by Senator Frisley. All in favor say aye. Carried. We have a fairly short calendar this morning, short agenda. I'd first of all remind anyone who's planning to testify to be sure and sign in, even though you may have done that many times before, to be sure we get your name spelled right. And we will follow just the order of the, as are printed on the agenda, with House Bill 1215 first and then 1231. So I would open public testimony to House Bill 1215, which is an act to transfer funds from the Tax Relief Fund to the General Fund and to revise certain provisions concerning the effective date of the collection allowance. And House Bill 1215 is now open for public testimony. Good morning,
Mr. Chairman, members of Senate Tax Committee. Good to be before you. Brian Olson, representing District 24 here. House Bill 1215 comes to you as a mechanism to save us some money, or to find some money. Let me just give you, there's a quite a history associated with this. Back in 2006, for those of you that were here, back when the grass was green and the sun was shining and we had money, we set up a tax relief fund. And in the event that Congress were to pass a streamlined sales tax, that South Dakota would hopefully be receiving upwards of $50 to $80 million. And the tax relief fund was created to funnel that money into this fund to go back out in property tax relief on year two. Also attached to that tax relief fund was a mechanism to the retailer collection allowance, which was repealed back in the Janklow administration, back when times were tough. And once that fund was to reach $10 million, the collection allowance would kick in. So when I brought this bill, that certainly raised some eyebrows of the retailers, as they thought this was attempting to take them back to zero. And in all honesty, I guess, you know, it was, but it wasn't any attempt to repeal the allowance. But given the state of our budget and the tough year we're in, I felt it appropriate that we use it to offset some of the deficits that we're seeing today instead of having money sit in a fund. So we passed it out of committee, and in the meantime, there was an amendment that was placed on the House floor that changed the balance of the fund from $10 million to tracking the revenues that was received. So if we take the balance back to zero or whatever we want to do, that bears no effect on when the retailer collection allowance will kick in, because they will just, the Department of Revenue will be required to track how much money. And if you look in the handout that I gave you that shows you the condition statement of the tax relief fund, it will show that there will be about $5.8 million in that fund in this coming July. The governor has, in fact, included sweeping the the amount that's in there right now of a little over $3.5 million, and that's why I had to amend it to take the money going forward for fiscal year 2010 and apply that towards our deficit. Now, given the fact that we placed the amendment on the House floor that has no bearing on the balance of the fund, I thought that it would be appropriate, instead of having to come in and take this money every year for whatever reason, whether we could be in this budget situation for a number of years, that this money be reverted to the general fund every year until such time as the streamlined sales tax project does move forward, and then the money will have to stay in that fund to be distributed back out into property tax relief. So we do know that there will be a cost with the retailer collection allowance. The estimates are anywhere between $2.5 and $5 million, and going by the condition statement, we're approaching about $1.5 million. And also on a note of that, the money that's flowing in this fund right now is coming from voluntary remittance of out-of-state retailers. There's retailers that are voluntarily collecting the tax for the state of South Dakota and remitting it to us, and that's the money that's coming into this fund. Sorry, I should have pointed that out earlier. But we don't expect that number to grow at a very fast pace. It's been getting better with South Dakota being a streamlined sales tax member state, and it'll probably grow a little bit until hopefully Congress will moves to approve the streamlined sales tax. So with that, that's a little bit of history. I think the amendment hopefully will take care of moving this money from the fund on an annual basis until we start receiving this money, and then it will start collecting and being redistributed out. So with that, I know it's a little confusing, so I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Representative Olson. And do I kind of assume that the amendment is to put the bill into the form that you would like it as a sponsor?
Yes.
If that be the case, I believe a motion to adopt the amendment would be in order.
So moved.
Moved by Senator Adelstein, seconded by Senator Frisley. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the bill is now amended. It's in the form that you would prefer. Are there further proponents to Senate Bill 1215? Further proponents to Senate Bill 1215? Seeing none, are there any opponents to 1215? Any opponents to Senate Bill 1215? Seeing none, are there any? We'll open to questions from the committee of any of those offering testimony.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Maher.
I have a question, but it's directed for Sean Lyons, the retailers. And I know he didn't provide any testimony. I don't know if you'll allow that or not. But
oh, yes, we can certainly allow that.
Okay.
Since he's here.
Mr. Chairman, my question for Mr. Lyons is, can you provide us some history? This came about in 2006 with a veto of a governor and override and everything else, and it's before my time, if you would please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Lyons, South Dakota Retailers Association. It is an interesting ride that was 2006, and it's even more interesting what House Bill 1215 has turned out to be. In 2006, our association introduced legislation calling for a collection allowance or a vendor's allowance. Keep in mind that this tax relief fund is somewhat separate from the vendor allowance. The vendor allowance is basically a credit that retailers would receive when they submit their sales tax collection return. So I believe it's 1.5%, not to exceed $70 per month. Now that's on money that they are to send in. It's not money coming back from the state. So in Representative Olson's logic that the amount lost from the state, that's correct. There is a loss of revenue to the state, but it's not on their end going back out. It's on what we submit in. In that legislation in 2006, we tied that vendor's allowance to the tax relief fund, which I believe at that time was representative of how WIC had brought that legislation. And so part of that was the voluntary collection of sales taxes from out-of-state retailers. We thought that was a good opportunity. Again, if you look at the streamlining legislation that's going through Washington or has been discussed each year, as well as a collection allowance, that's one of the things that's been discussed as part of that. And so we thought that was an appropriate mechanism to say that once that reaches $10 million, that's when the vendor's allowance would begin. We recognize the fact that it will be a number of years probably before retailers receive that for doing the work of the state. I believe there's about 26 states around the country right now that have a collection allowance already in place that retailers are already receiving benefit of submitting sales tax to the state to their respective states. Obviously, we weren't as fortunate to do that. I'll go back even further. Governor Mickelson, back in the early 90s, we did have a collection allowance that was on the books, and retailers were receiving benefit. It was then in 1996, I believe, that then Governor Janklow, as part of the property tax reduction program, decided to bring a variety of different mechanisms, including the vendor's allowance at that time. And so it wasn't until 2006, fast forward, that we brought our legislation back again. Senator, that's a very long, windy answer to your question, and I'm not sure if that gave you any clarity or not. Obviously, Mr. Chairman, if I could, we're obviously closely watching 1215. We think the bill as it passed the House certainly made sense. I've got some questions this morning on the amendment, but haven't had the opportunity to visit with Representative Olson, so I'd be happy to answer any other questions. Did that answer your question, Senator Maher?
I think you probably answered the questions for quite a few of us, because that's an issue that does have a little history to it.
Has a lot of history to it. Thank you.
Any further questions from any of the committee members?
I do have a question.
Senator Merchant.
From any of the sponsors, please. And I don't know if Tom would be, if Senator Dempster would be able to. I see his name on the bill, and maybe he can address the question I have is in Section 2, to the amendment of cumulative total of the net revenue rather than the balance. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Well, Senator, there's a time to... Tom Dempster, State Senator from District 9, there's a time to speak and there's a time to be silent, and I thought I would use this as an opportunity to be silent. I can tell you what I think it means. Ryan is going to back me up. I think it used to say that when the balance in the fund is $10 million, then the retailers get their collection fee. Now it says as soon as $10 million has run through that fund, irrespective of what the balance is, then the retailers get that collection fee. I believe that's correct.
Any further questions? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and open to committee a discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
I was here at the time that Senator Wick's bill passed, and can I may speak to the amendment as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly.
I guess it's a discussion. I guess we can say anything. I don't have any problem, given our present condition, of setting aside our original consideration of $10 million. I do have a little bit of a problem with the amendment, in as much as I'm not sure that we want to make this an automatic disposition year after year after year without ever coming back, because just as Senator Maher just asked the question, people forget what happens. It's something like the $7 million we used to subsidize ethanol plants. Everyone's forgotten that came out of the highway fund. So I'd like to support the bill but oppose the amendment.
Okay. I'd remind you that the bill has already been amended, so it's in its amended form now. But you know, your comments are very well.
Maybe better. You're right. It did pass. Maybe better off to take it to the floor.
Further discussion?
I have a question for Mr. Olson.
Senator Maher.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Representative Olson, on this $10 million flow-through, so now we're going to be sweeping this fund, who's going to be tracking to show that, okay, every year we remit about $1.5 million into the fund, and then it's swept at the end of the year? Who's going to track this fund? Because we've already have about, I don't know, $3 to $5 million into this fund. So in the next 5 years, we should be reaching that $10 million dollar limit. And then I guess my question is who's going to be watching that to make sure that when we reach the $10 million, that at that time the retailers will be getting their credit?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
That would be Department of Revenue. That was the mechanism that was set up over in the House with the sponsor of the amendment, that they would be in charge of tracking what that flow through would be. So that because that was the whole point, was they wanted to separate the balance of the fund from the flow through. So that's exactly why I brought the amendment, because the balance has absolutely nothing to do with the collection allowance any longer. Thank you.
Further discussion or action?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nelson.
I move to pass.
Motion by Senator Nelson. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Frisley to do pass. Any speaking to the motion? As amended. In speaking to the motion as amended, 1215. If not, the secretary will call the roll, and those voting aye say yes, those no say no.
Edelstein?
Aye.
Howie?
Aye.
Gerstad? Maher?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
7 yes, 1 no. 1 excused.
Okay, Senate Bill, our House Bill 1215, as amended, will go to the floor on a 7-1 vote. Before we proceed, I would like to introduce our pages that are here with us this morning. We have a new set of the fourth group of pages. From Highmore is Shiloh Day. And from Colombe is Lakin Stinson. Welcome. Good to have you with us. Now we will move on to Senate, our House Bill 1231, which is an act to increase the exemption on the proceeds of sale of certain homesteads. House Bill 1231 is now open for public testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Taxation Committee. I'm Mike Verschio, representative for District 30. I had earlier had the pages pass out some documentation from an attorney who I know in Rapid City, Stephen Weselick, who brought this to my attention. And after he talked to me for about half an hour, I decided this might be worth following up on. Although this bill passed through the House Taxation Committee and the House with unanimous votes, it's not without a little bit of controversy amongst some lending institutions and some attorneys. So I thought I'd preface my remarks with that one. South Dakota's homestead exemption statute provides that a homestead, as defined by Chapter 43-31, is absolutely exempt, or if it is sold under Chapter 2119 or sold voluntarily, then it is limited to $30,000. This $30,000 is absolutely exempt for 1 year after the owner receives the proceeds. The homestead exemption is a privilege granted by law, not an estate in land. The purpose of 1231 is to increase the homestead exemption from $30,000 to $60,000. This exemption has not changed in 30 years. It will also bring South Dakota more in line with our neighbors like Iowa with no monetary limitation, Minnesota up to $200,000, but up to $500,000 if used primarily for ag, Montana up to $100,000, North Dakota up to $80,000, and Nebraska and Wyoming are at $12,500 and $10,000 respectively. The value limitation has significance only when the homestead is the subject of litigation between the owner and a judgment creditor. Homestead laws in particular are construed for the creation and protection of the family home. The underlying purpose is to provide the security of a home to a family against the claims of creditors. The homestead right depends entirely upon constitutional and statutory provisions that create them. The object of all homestead legislation is to protect the home, to furnish shelter for the family, and to promote the interests and welfare of society and the state by restricting in consideration the benefits conferred, alienation, or encumbrance by the owner's sole act and deed. In the absence of any expression of a contrary intention, a debtor should be presumed to intend no further peril to his homestead right than the necessity demands. The time is right to increase South Dakota's exemption. Families in South Dakota, as across the nation, are facing greater financial pressures. Individuals and families are afraid and anxious about their futures. Many are losing hope. Obtaining and keeping the American dream of home ownership, health care, college education for children, and a secure retirement is at greater risk now than ever before in recent memory. The monetary limit of the homestead exemption, currently at $30,000, again, hasn't been increased in about 30 years. When considered against a 3% rate of inflation, this exemption is inadequate to shelter a fair value of one's home from the threat of levy by judgment creditors or liquidation and bankruptcy. Think of how few homes can be purchased today with $30,000. From the March Black Hills Home Journal, the average price for a 1 acre or less lot is $58,700. The average price of a three-bedroom home is $247,500. With 20% down, you'd need $49,500 if you could find a bank to lend you the money at 20% down if you were forced into bankruptcy. The current $30,000, you can see, is almost $20,000 short. Think of how many farms and ranches, properties acquired through intergenerational transfers, or homeowners who have faithfully discharged their mortgage obligations are at risk because the equity exceeds a mere $30,000. The proposed increase to $60,000 is a reasonable one, as evidenced by the state and federal exemptions in other jurisdictions. Public policy strongly favors this amendment, and this is good for South Dakota. I ask that you give approval to H.S. 1231 to protect a time-honored fundamental right of home ownership in South Dakota. Thank you, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Are there further proponents to House Bill 1231? Further proponents to House Bill 1231? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1231? Anyone opposed to House Bill 1231? Seeing none, we'll open to committee questions on 1231.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Maher.
I have a question for Representative. Representative, I missed the beginning of your testimony. What's the definition of the homestead exemption again?
South Dakota's, Mr. Chairman, okay. South Dakota's homestead exemption statute provides that a homestead, as defined by Chapter 4331, is absolutely exempt, or if it is sold under Chapter 2119 or sold voluntarily, then it is limited to $30,000. This $30,000 will be absolutely exempt for 1 year after the owner receives the proceeds.
Let's see what 4331 says.
That should be in your the handout I gave you. Yeah, it should be on page 1, paragraph 4.
Okay, all right.
Senator Peterson.
Question, if I may.
Yes.
If I'm reading this correctly, if an elderly person ended up on Medicaid in a home, would we be exempting $60,000 from the price of the sale of their home of what could be taken for the Medicaid providing?
Technically, but there is under 4331, there is another, a homestead with the value of less than $170,000 of a person 70 years of age or older, and the unremarried surviving spouse of such person is exempt from sale for taxes for so long as it continues to possess the character of a homestead. That would be the only thing that would make it any more than that. Again, this comes in, I don't know if this will help you or not, but into play almost only when there is a bankruptcy caused by a catastrophic illness or a lawsuit of injury on your personal property, where the judgment would be extremely high.
Further questions? Senator Peterson?
I see we do have some representatives from the Revenue Department here. Could I ask a question?
Certainly can.
Of them? I'm going to ask you this the same question. You know, when an elderly person just owns a home and when they ended up on Medicaid for a number of years in a nursing home, the nursing home, we can go back and collect the value of their property to a certain limit that they're allowed to keep. Does this affect that limit?
Mr. Chairman, David Wiest from the Department of Revenue and Regulation. I'm also a lawyer. I also litigated a case about 5 years ago in the South Dakota Supreme Court, In re Dorothy Davis, which caused this body to increase the homestead exemption for those folks over the age of 70. To answer your question, Senator Peterson, how it works is this. For people under the age of 70, I believe, $30,000 of your homestead is exempt from seizure in any way, shape, or form. For example, say that I have a $200,000 home and I cause some damages to you in the neighborhood of $1 million. Well, you could petition the court to have my home sold, and I get to keep $30,000, but they would take, in my example, $170,000 that would be useful for you to, for your debt. Now let's go to the question that you had regarding an elderly person who's placed into a nursing home. Whether you are under the age of 70, you can certainly go into a nursing home at that stage, or over the age of 70 as well. What would happen is that the state would not have access, I don't believe, to anything less than the homestead amount. That's my understanding. Now, I am not a Department of Social Services expert to be able to answer that question without any reservation, sir, but I believe that that's the case. In other words, right now, if I go into a nursing home today at age 47, I would have, on my $200,000 home example, I would have to, I could only shield $30,000 under today's law. I believe, I don't know, I can't remember what the bill does, but it does increase the exemption amount. Does that assist you?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Further questions? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and open to committee discussion and or action. Senator Howey.
Move to pass.
We have a motion from Senator Howey. Second? Second by Senator Nelson for due pass of 1231. Speaking to the motion? If not, those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Howie?
Aye.
Gerstad? Maher?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
8-1.
Okay, 1231 goes to the floor on an 8-2-1 vote. Senator Merchant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that we take Senate Bill 199 off the table and hear the bill today with an amendment that I would like to propose.
Okay. That is the motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Gerstad. Now, as I understand, this requires a two-thirds vote because you're asking to be put it on the agenda without having been previously posted. And we will do this as a roll call. So all of those in favor say aye, those opposed say nay, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Howie?
No.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Frisley?
No.
Hansen?
No. Okay, the
6-3.
Senate Bill 199 is now open once again for public testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Pam Merchant, District 7 Senate. And I'm very pleased to present an amendment to you this morning to Senate Bill 199 that lays out a redistribution method to non-food sales tax items. This will hold cities and tribes harmless. A couple weeks ago, you heard strong testimony as to how this bill helps the people of South Dakota. And I won't take a lot of time going into this, but want to explain the bill again in brief. And may I also speak to the amendment after you have a moment to read it?
I believe since the amendment is what you want to put it into the form that you prefer, the amendment would be appropriate to move the amendment.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Gerstad? Motion by Senator Gerstad. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Okay. Senate Bill 199 is now amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. A reminder that Senate Bill 199 in its original form repeals the tax on all food other than specifically left out, such as pop and candy, and that's very spelled out, and we went over that before. And it also allows for a tax shift of 0.5% to non-food tax items, making this our tax system less regressive and moves it from needs to more wants. And it also, thirdly, in reminder, repeals the $3 million food tax refund program. And I wanted to reiterate that that has no replacement at this time, that it cost our state. And finally, the amendment that you received today spells out the reimbursement to cities and tribes. And if you will look at Section 17, within 90 days, the retailer will file and return. And within that return, it will spell out exactly how much food has been sold in that municipality. And they will be receiving in full back to that municipality from the state. And that comes to pass because of the 0.5% shift. And then likewise, the Indian tribes, pursuant to their charter or their agreement with the state, will be held harmless as well and in a similar mode. So I urge you to allow this bill to go to the full Senate for debate. It's a very important issue that affects the people of South Dakota, especially now when people are making those very difficult decisions whether to buy food or gas. It's a very comprehensive bill. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I think this amendment solves a lot of the distribution methods that people were having concerns about, and I urge you to your support. Thank you. I'll stand by for questions.
Okay. Are there further proponents to Senate Bill 199 as now amended? For the proponents, Okay, we will open to opponents. Are there opponents to Senate Bill 199 as amended? Good morning.
Jane Page, Department of Revenue and Regulation. Again, the administration is opposed to exempting food and increasing the sales tax rate. On this amendment, we're trying to figure out how in the world to do this, to have someone report a tax that they're not going to pay, because that's what I assume this means. You're going to report the tax but not pay it, because what our system will do is automatically send them a bill. And to fix that, to fix all our tax returns, the paper return, the electronic return, the streamlined sales tax return, I'm not sure all that can be done easily, especially the streamlined sales tax return. And I'm also not sure with streamlined that we can require anybody to report a tax that they don't have to pay. So there's a lot of technical situations with this amendment that's very complicated. And I guess that concludes my testimony. This would be very difficult to implement.
Are there further opponents to Senate Bill 199 as amended? Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Weiss from the Department of Revenue and Regulation, and I'll restrict my comments to Section 19. And that has to deal with how this bill would interface with Indian tribes. Right now, we have tax collection agreements with Indian tribes, and here's how they mechanically work. The state is able to impose the state tax on certain transactions. The tribes can impose the tribal tax on certain transactions. And how we work it is that we collect all our state tax, and then on the other transactions where the tribes can impose the tribal tax, we act as an agent for the tribe to collect that tax for them. We are just simply the collector of their tax, and then we immediately turn it around and send that tax back to them. And why that is important, you see, is that money never belongs to the state of South Dakota, so to speak. In other words, it is the tribal tax dollars, it's not the state tax dollars. And why is that important? The reason that that's important, in my view as a lawyer, is because if that money belongs to the state of South Dakota, to take money out of the state treasurer, we have to have an appropriations bill to do that. Well, the thing that I think about, again, and this is what I mentioned last time, and I understand that, you know, Senator Merchant really and truly believes in her bill, as she should, but my concern is that I don't know how I can appropriate state money to an Indian tribe, and that's what Section 19 appears to me to be doing. The current system is not an appropriation because we are acting as the agent for the tribe, but this would seem to change how that would work. So I guess in my view, and again, I'm going to my comments are limited to Section 19, which is on the amendment. In my view, Section 19 in the amendment doesn't mechanically work because I have concerns about appropriating money to an Indian tribe, and I just don't know if that's permissible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Further opponents to Senate Bill 199? Further opponents? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, open to committee questions of either the opponents or proponents.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
question Ball. For Mr. Weiss. I want to use a hypothetical situation here and just give me your best educated guess or opinion. Let's say the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe this next week outlaws sales tax on food. Is there anything the state can do about that, being you're just like an intermediary of collecting sales taxes and stuff?
Mr. Chairman, what we have said, Senator Maher, is when we visited with all the Indian tribes regarding tax collection agreements, is that our statutes, SDCL 10-12A-1, three or four, I believe, require that they have an identical tax system to our tax system. And what would happen if we would run across a tribe that does not have an identical tax system to our system, we would have to terminate the tax collection agreement.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Gerstein?
Mr. Reese, please. Hi. Yes, good morning. I guess I have two questions. What I'm wondering, this would give quite a positive revenue source of revenue, and so I'm wondering how what you think about that. You know, probably should be about $80 million more dollars coming in from the sales tax. And then my second question is, you said it's a little bit more difficult to do it, but it's not impossible. That's my second question.
Sir, Chairman. Senator Gerstein, are we talking about Indian country areas? Is that what you're – the first part of your question is what – apparently the bill brings in more money, okay, and whether that's good or bad or the feelings of the department on that. What I would ask you to do is I'll defer that to Ms. Page. But the second question, I think you talked about whether it is impossible or not. That one is directed at the tribal issue, I assume, correct?
Or,
okay, perhaps you do, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Your first question, and I don't remember, it brings in extra money. I know at one time you told me, and I hadn't done the analysis, that it brings in enough to refund the cities. It would be revenue neutral with state tax and bring in enough to refund the cities with maybe a little bit more. I just remember you telling me that, but I didn't do the analysis.
Mr. Chair,
from
what the analysis was, it was another 0.5% in the sales tax, I think, would bring in approximately $80 million. And then if we're getting rid of the cities and the tribes, I think that would cost around or 50,000. So we got a surplus around, around 30 million is, and so I'm wondering, no? Okay, it's going to be just a little bit over then.
Okay.
Maybe 3 million.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman. Okay, so what's your question then as far as the surplus?
Is that, you know, what is your thoughts about that if it's bringing in a little bit more?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
With the complexity of how this would have to be handled, you'd probably have to give it to revenue to renew the computer system just to handle it. This is very complex, and that goes to your second question. Whether it's impossible, probably not from our point of view, to get the taxpayers to do that correctly. That's always an iffy thing, have them report it and not pay it. And with a streamlined seller, I'm not sure we can require them to report a tax that they don't have to pay.
Senator Peterson.
Question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. When I read the Section 17 of the bill, it says that within 90 days, the department is supposed to distribute money back to each municipality according to the gross receipts for the sale of food. Is this something that can be done without authorization by the legislature? How can this be done?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If you're asking how it can be refunded or how it can be
is it
reported?
Legal to do that?
I think you have to say it's legal. I'm not sure if it can be done. Yeah, the bill would make it legal, but without the bill, I'm not sure that could be done.
Further questions? Senator Adelstein.
Do we have the amount of money? What do you know the amount of money that is presently collected by all municipalities in connection with their tax on food, for example, Rapid City? I know we had to come to some uniform understanding. You know that total amount?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
At this time, we don't. We back in 2003, I believe we did reports. But at that point, some cities had just a 1% sales tax on their foods, and that was the only thing they had the 1% sales tax on. So we could tell what the amount from food was. And, of course, that included candy and pop and all those things, too. Since that time, we have some reports. Well, we'll look at the grocery receipts from a grocery store and figure a certain percentage is from food, and, of course, the rest is from non-edible items. So that's how we figure it now. We look at the actual businesses and figure, and I don't know if that comes from a national association that says most grocery stores 75% is food or whatever percent we use. That's how we figure it now. It's just an estimated analysis. But then you get into places like in a gas station that would sell some food that isn't pop or candy, or other little businesses that aren't grocery stores or aren't convenience stores, we don't include them in the analysis. So to get to the exact amount, no, we can't do that.
What is your estimate, recognizing that it may have some error, if I may, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The state tax on food, after we subtract out the candy and pop and everything, we came up with an estimate of about between 41 and 45 million, and that's at 4%. Most cities are at 2%. If you take that in half, it'd be about $22 million.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
And how much are we presently depositing in the special fund that we have for people who meet that level of poverty?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that. That's a social service question, I think. I don't know the answer to that.
The credit cards that we issue, you don't know how much that is in the budget?
No, I don't.
Mr. Chairman, do you know if anyone does here that's here today? Maybe Senator Merchant?
Senator Adelstein, I can, you know, we passed a bill just a few days ago that, you know, basically backfills that fund. And so, you know, I don't know it. The backfill lasts for a year and a half, 2 years, or whatever until it's gone. And, that, you know, refunds all of the money that those people falling below the poverty level that, and it's based on a calculated number, which, as I understand, is actually a little bit more than the amount that they actually spend for food. So. You know, those that receive the refund are actually getting a little bit more than what they've actually spent. Further questions? The chair would ask, again, Ms. Page, you mentioned streamlined a couple times. Would this perhaps put us in jeopardy as far as our participation in the streamlined sales tax agreement?
Mr. Chairman, I can't say for sure, but streamlined is trying to make things either simplified or uniform, and it's more complex to tell somebody they have to report a tax that they don't owe. So whether it violates it right at this moment, I think people from the business community could come to Streamline and say that it does, and we'd have to defend it, and, you know, that goes on quite often at Streamline. Somebody will say, I think your state is out of compliance because of this, then you have to come in and defend it, and then they'll take a vote on it. And at this point, I just don't know what they would say, but I can see that it is more complex.
Thank you. Any further questions? Further questions? Senator, if you'd like a moment to offer some rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pam Merchant, District 7 Senator. And I want to point out at the bottom of the page that the title, this is an exemption, food items, are, this is an exemption. This is not a, as Ms. Page has mentioned, no, we're not collecting money on food, but it is an exemption to the taxes that are already being collected. So it can be, and it would be listed as an exemption, a list on the sales tax reporting sheet from everyone, just like there's other exemptions that are out there for sales tax. This would be classified as an exemption. So you would have your gross receipts, and then you would define them as such on lines below what exemptions you have, and this would be an exemption to that. So there would be a way to gather this. Second thing I wanted to point out is that this is still uniform. 4.5% is state tax. It's still uniform. So the streamlined sales tax, this is uniform. And the question on, there was a question on how much does this bring in. If you included pop and candy, if the food tax was exempted across the board, if you include pop and candy, it's $80 million that you would lose, and that 0.5% increase is $80 million. So since we are still going to tax pop and candy, there's a cushion. Does everybody understand that there's a cushion, that we are still receiving that the sales tax on pop and candy? So this does go in a bit. It adds up to a bit more than what you would need to make it totally tax neutral. There's no way to really make this completely tax neutral, but I would ascertain that we would need to have that cushion, and I'm glad that it is there, because then it will help make this process work. And in Section 19, we already collect the taxes for both the cities and the tribes, and we do reimburse them currently. So this would be a matter of adjusting that based on that line item of the exemption on their sales tax form. I do not see it as being any more cumbersome than that. They would have to keep track of the food, the food items, or the non-food, however you want to look at it. They would have to keep track of it, just as they keep track of lots of other things in their business. And then that form would have to be submitted to the state, and in turn they would be reimbursed as a city or tribe. And I want to remind you that the great benefit that people will receive, they will not pay any tax on food. That's enormous. You cannot forget about that, and changing our system to suit that, I think, is well worth it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. We will close the public testimony and open to committee discussion or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
I think this is really a laudable effort. My big problem is the uncertainties of the math. The administrative, I always think that can be solved with modern computers. My problem is that what will 0.5% on everything else generate? And we're talking that at the present time, probably the total 1% is somewhere between 120 and 150 million. So 0.5% will generate $75 million. Or 70, they're on the safe side. 20 million of which will need to go back to the community, at least based on what it was, and that would leave a gross increase to the state of $50 million. And if I understood Senator Merchant correctly, we're thinking now we're collecting $80 million on food tax, and so therefore the state would then have a $30 million deficit, unless I've done something wrong in my math. I'll go once again. If we collected 120 million total, that would give us 0.5% would give us 60 million. From the 60 million, we would have to refund 20 million to the cities, which would leave us a net to the state of 40 million from the 0.5%. And that's what worries me, that it would create a shortfall. I think this is really a laudable bill, and I think I'll end up, after a lot of discussion in Rapid City, by the way, with at a large Cracker Bill. I'll have to vote no on this, but we'll look to for next year a better handle on the numbers.
Thank you, Senator. Further comments? Any further discussion? I guess as chair, I would kind of admonish you a little bit. There's two things that concern me a great deal. One is the possibility that it could create some difficulty with regard to our streamlined sales tax agreement. And, of course, we already talked about a bill with regard to streamlined earlier today. And I feel so strongly that that is such an extremely important venture that we don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, even have any flavor of some difficulties. And probably equal to that is the situation that would exist with regard to the handling of dollars that are to be returned back to tribal governments, which at the surface may appear to be pretty simple, but you know the way we do things. We have to go through the appropriations process on many, many dollars that are just pass-through dollars, and opening up the question as to the our authorization and ability to be able to have that kind of a transaction really does present some difficult issues as far as the relationship with the tribes. And in many instances, the tribe, you know, the groceries are the one thing that does generate some revenue to the tribes. So, you know, we don't want it to put that in jeopardy. We would be open to action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Frisley. Okay, we have a motion to the 41st day on Senate Bill 199 as amended. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Howey. Speaking to that motion?
Alternative motion.
Senator Merchant.
Move to pass.
Second.
We have a motion from Senator Merchant, seconded by Senator Gerstad. Do pass. Speaking to that motion. If not, those in favor of the due pass on Senate Bill 199 as amended will vote yes. Those opposed will vote no, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Alstein?
Pass.
Howey?
No.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Maher?
No.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Frisley?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Senator Adelstein.
Oh, Senator Adelstein.
I know. I recognize the name. I'm going to say yes to get it to the floor. Yes.
5-4.
Okay, Senate Bill 199 as amended passes with a 5-4 vote. There further business to come before the tax meeting this morning?
Title amendment.
Okay, we do need a title amendment, which is 199 FTC. Would somebody like to move the title amendment? Senator Merchant, second. Second by Senator Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The title is amended. With that, I believe that we are in position to call for a motion to adjourn.
So
moved by Senator Merchant, seconded by Senator Howley. All in favor say aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carried.